You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Take one.
Stephen and Dana, and we're in the room. Hi, Dana. Welcome back.
Hi, Stephen. Thank you for having me.
How was your holiday break?
It was great. How was yours?
Extended.
I didn't even look at what our last episode was. What was it?
I didn't either. I'm sure we did like an end of year cheer, didn't we? That's what we tend to do.
And then January flew by.
We played our game and we looked
February flew by. March flew by.
Well, we got very, very busy. You're producing a documentary about one of the most important people on the planet, and I'm dressing all the other important people on the planet.
Yes! We got very busy doing what we like to do, where we like to do them, so.
Yeah, booked and blessed.
Booked and blessed, and I'm so tired. So but we're just going to take a nap for this episode. Yeah,
this is a one-hour moment of silence.
Oh, no, it's great to see you. We've had little dates here and there, listeners. Me and Steve.
We have had little dates, and that's been nice to get back out in the world.
Yeah, we saw Tig Notaro, our favorite.
We did very recently. We laughed our little tail feathers off.
Yes, we shook those tail feathers.
Yeah, ooh, and that Thai food was really good, too.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And then what else did we do? Well, okay, wait. Well, we saw Tina. You took me to Tina.
I took you to Tina.
Apropos of today's episode.
Yeah, we went to Tacuba and then to Teen Cuba.
Yeah, we're alliterative queens.
Obviously. Obviously. Yeah.
Tacubas and teens.
Yeah, so I took you to Tina because we were offered some comps at some point, and I wasn't there as often as I am now at that point, so I got to see it too for the first time. And like understand what I'm doing, understand the bigger picture.
We were little front row iCats.
Yeah, and I got to see my new friend, Ari Groover, who is here with us today. Like, hiya. Do her thing.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here, my queen.
A real life person.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You obviously know Ari from Tina, the Tina Turner musical, but we also know her from Head Over Heels with our queen, Bonnie Milligan.
Yes,
and loved. Holler If You Hear Me, which was the Tupac musical at the Palace Theater.
Amazing.
Yeah. Which I have a water bottle from.
Oh, that's crazy.
Oddly.
Broadway Flea Market?
Probably.
It had to have been. I don't even have a water bottle from them.
It was in some bag.
Yeah.
How you doing, Ari?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there.
Yeah.
I'm just chilling. I'm excited. I'm going to go see Funny Girl today. Yeah. So I could go see my other two, you know, Broadway, you know, beauties, Justin Prescott and Amber Ardolino, which I did Head Over Heels with. Cool. Justin Prescott was my twin, so I wanted to come and support. Oh, and John Michael. John Michael's in it as well.
I cannot wait to hear your thoughts.
I know. I'm very curious to see what's going to be given on the stage. But I'm very excited. You know, it's good to see Michael Mayer. The last thing I did with Michael Mayer was Little Shop of Horrors. And we had such a great time. So I know they're having a great time.
Oh, my God. And that show is so good. That show is so good.
Little Shop is, that was what I did before I came to Tina. Little Shop was, that's what got my Lucille Lortel nominee. I didn't even know what that was when I found out until somebody was like, yeah, girl, that's a big deal.
That's a thing.
Yes.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, she's cute.
She's cute. She's a cute little, you know, cute little thing for playing the urchin. It was fun. It was a fun show.
What did your... Because I don't know any of this about you. I just know, like, the work you. What was your road to Broadway? What did that look like? Was that the childhood dream, like New York theater?
Yes, star. You were born where?
Because you are also a DJ.
Yes, I am. I did not see this as the dream. Absolutely not. I always used to think that Broadway was too white and I was too different to be on there, if I'm being completely honest. But I was born in Savannah, Georgia. I'm a Georgia peach, and then grew up in Savannah and Atlanta, Georgia. And I actually went to school. Like, I did musical theater and performing arts in school, went to performing arts high school for dance and acting, not necessarily musical theater. And I also went for illustration. I really wanted to be into art and wanted to be a sequential artist for like storyboard animations, comic books, because I was a comic book nerd. So I didn't really see myself being a Broadway performer. I actually saw myself either doing art for companies or either being a backup dancer behind some famous singer. That's what I thought I was going to be. And the higher power said, absolutely not.
I'm going to fight back on that, because we can see you. We're all virtual listeners. Yes. And I can see, is this your apartment?
Yeah, just
circle yes or no. Okay.
I'm in Jersey City right now.
Okay. So you have some banging art on your wall and also on your earlobes.
Oh, yeah. Earrings,
I can tell you are an artiste, and do not hide that light under a bushel. Oh, no.
Yeah, I should appreciate it more. I mean, that was one of my first loves. But yeah, I never thought I would have been on musical, just in, would have been here on Broadway. But I'm here.
Yay. What was your first theater experience? What kind of gave you that juice?
The first one that I saw was, my mom used to teach at Savannah State, and they ended up doing The Wiz, and I love The Wiz. I would play the album all the time. We would watch the movie all the time. And the first time I really got to see like a actual show on tour, which is all crazy, y'all, it was Cats. it was Cats. And I was like, oh my God, these people are Cats. And that is so dope. As corny as it sounds, Cats was like one of the first like professional shows I ever saw, ever seen, whatever the past tense is for it, that I saw, that I was just enamored with the fact that these people were being cats.
Yep.
And my little mind went running rampant with all of the things that I can do. The power of
transformation.
Yes.
Like, you can't unsee that.
No, you cannot.
Now and forever.
Been scared, and it was a bunch of little kids that were petrified, and I wanted to be up there on stage looking at, oh, what's his name, Deuteronomy, yeah. Being like, how do you sit so still?
I always think about that on TV when like somebody's dead. I'm like, how do you play dead for so long? How do you breathe that shallowly?
How do you do that? You don't take a breath of air at one point in time?
I count my residual checks.
I know that's right. That's how over, I would do it.
Over the fence. They're jumping the fences.
You've lost your damn mind.
I know. This is called punchy.
Ooh. Punchy Brewster over here.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so from Savannah, Georgia to New York City.
Yeah, Savannah, Atlanta, then New York City.
What brought you to New York?
What brought me to New York was the first show that I ever did in New York City, which was Bear the Musical off Broadway.
Yes.
And it was the revival. What did you say, revival? I guess you could say that. It was a new version that we did at New World Stages, and the wonderful Stafford Arima directed this. He's also the person that directed Allegiance, for people mm-hmm. who may not know who he is. Mm-hmm. And then got here, had no clue. I was like, I never thought that I would have been in New York being some character dancing with Travis Wall teaching me choreography and then doing the craziness stuff of theater that we do. And yeah, that's what got me here. And that was like in 2012. So that's almost 10 years ago, actually.
I had no idea that it was just that you booked a gig that took you here, and here you stayed.
And I stayed. It was no point in me going back to Atlanta, because at that time there was just nothing there for me to sort of go back to. So I just thought maybe I'll just take my chances here in New York and see what happens. And, you know, I had little jobs, survival jobs here and there. My favorite one was working at the Museum of Sex. Y'all, that was a very interesting job.
What was your, if you'll pardon the pun, position there?
My position, if it was up to me, it would be working with all the doggies. No, I'm playing. my position, I was actually like a sales clerk at the store. And it was interesting because we had to learn a lot about the toys. So different companies would come in and they would give us some of the toys for free to sample, try out. And people would ask, you know, how do you feel about this toy? I'm looking for something for my wife, or I'm looking for something for my husband. I'm looking for something for my partner. What would you suggest? And it took a lot of actually educating myself on one, what I liked, in order to, like, you know, tell others what is the greatest, you know, toy. Not only that, you have the museum, but a lot of people would also come there for certain events that they would have there. Well, you know, sometimes they would teach people like a beginner's course on, you know, bondage, you know, S&M. You know, it was actually very safe for the most part. You know, you get some of your crazies that think, oh, you're a prostitute. And you're like, no, that's not how this works. Yeah. I'm also sex workers. Let them have their, they need money too. But it was a very educational environment for the most part that I actually had fun. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. You got the companies that are really wanting to know your input, you know, what you think about these toys. Can we try it out for, you know, this amount of time? This is the thing that's in season. This is the ones that the couples really like. It was pretty interesting.
I bet.
A lot of information that was shared. And I was just like, oh, that's, I ain't want all that, but okay. But it was great. Now you know. Now I know. But it was great. And then from there, in the meantime, went, did the survival jobs, and then ended up booking Holler If You Hear Me, the workshop, which was like right before we went on Broadway. And the workshop was very special because that's how I got to meet my dear friend, you know, God rest his soul, Chadwick Boseman, because he was the lead before Saul Williams took over. And he was such a light and a leader. And, you know, it was so funny because we were just seeing his career sort of take off while doing this sort of workshop. And, you know, everybody knew who he was. Everybody was like, oh, you're 42, you're Jackie Robinson, because that's what everybody could just pinpoint from then and there. And he was going to go do James Brown after that. And then along with that, finding out that he was going in for Black Panther and all this stuff. So he was taking off, but it was a good, you know, experience to, I think everybody now knowing what we know now and now seeing the things that have happened, we understood that that experience was really to all fellowship as a family first before we even went to Broadway, and sort of the fellowship him, because he was really, really, really a good guy. Was really about giving back. So that was my first interaction with Holler If You Hear Me. And then, you know, trying to figure out if we were going to make it on Broadway. And then they decided to put us up at the Palace, which was the biggest theater, one of the biggest theaters of all time. And I said,
very big.
Yeah.
This is currently hovering in the air.
Don't know what's going on. She's just floating.
I'm cool with that.
And, you know, it was an experience where we had a lot of Broadway first. Like one of my good friends, Shakina Calicango, who is in Paradise Square now, who did Slay Play. I don't think that was her first Broadway show, but it was like a couple of us. And it was a pretty predominantly Black show. So we had a lot of first of young Black people on this stage for the first time. You know, Joshua Boone, who's like also doing things. Jahi Kears, who's doing things. Everybody is doing like magnificent stuff from that show. And I didn't realize that that Tupac musical was a catalyst for a lot of things that are sort of happening now. Which, you know, kind of sucks because we were kind of, you know, put on the back burner for a lot of things. But I think it was very imperative for people, especially people of color, especially Black people, to see a whole bunch of Black people on stage talking about something that is real, and at that time in 2014 was ahead of his time. If it would have came out maybe 2016 with all of, you know, the police brutality, you know, like Eric Garner, all of these young men that were sort of being killed by police, and then the prison systems, and knowing all the information that we know now, I think it would have been very impactful. But it still did it. It still did its justice. It's just, it was ahead of its time. That's what I say. But it was one of the greatest experiences that I've ever had for a first Broadway show.
Yeah, I betcha.
Yeah.
Did you ever tour?
No, I've done out of towns, but I've never toured at all. I would say sometimes I would be like, oh, would I want to tour? But I feel like touring is now different, being that, you know, producers want to be, you know, a little bit reserved about their money. So the contracts are not the greatest, I think. And I don't even want to say that, because I think it depends on people's predicaments. And I think a tour is a wonderful thing to do. You have the experience and all of that stuff. But I think now I'm kind of like, for myself and what I'm trying to go through, a tour would have to be beneficial for me in terms of money. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
You made yourself a home and it's like, oh, I'm here and I'm settled and I don't know why I would want to go on tour unless the money was great.
Right. Yeah. You know, part you've always wanted to play, person you've always wanted to work with. Right. Check's too good to say no.
Right. Yeah. But I've never
tried and get two of those met.
If you can get two, you're doing great.
Yep.
But I've never toured. Maybe one day. It's never, you know, I never say never.
It would be a cool way to see the country. I love, you know, I have friends who mostly tour. Like, they hate being in New York because it means they're between jobs.
Yeah.
And they've seen every tour, every theater, everywhere.
Yeah, that and is true.
The theater nerd in me is so jealous of that.
Yes.
You've been in every single sacred house.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Isn't it? It's so dope. But I haven't had that experience yet. Maybe one day.
Like old vaudevillian in you, Stephen.
Right?
Oh, bus and truck.
Yeah.
Got your can of grease paint in the follow spot.
That's all I need. Pretzels and beer. Pretzels and beer.
Pretzels and beer. That's it. That'll take you far.
That's it. Or I guess in your case, Cheez-Its.
I do love some Cheez-Its. I would tip some Cheez-Its up. There's, and Stephen knows, because I'm like, I'll have my Cheez-Its and like, I'll have my robe, and then I forget that I got the Cheez-It wrappers, like the bag in my robe, and I forget to throw it in the trash. And Stephen's probably digging in and being like, already had Cheez-Its? And it's the white cheddar.
Yes.
The best ones.
My new favorite question is, if you're going on a road trip and you stop at a gas station, it's not attached to a Taco Bell, like it's just a gas station, you can get three things. What are they?
Oh my God, this is
great
hard.
Question.
Okay, so I got to have like the Cheetos puffs. I got to have the Cheetos puffs. Like, it's amazing. The Southern girl in me will have some sunflower seeds because I would
just spit them out the window.
Yeah, we would just tear up sunflower seeds to the point where our mouths are like, you really need to have some water, friend. I need you to drink. And this is going to sound, it depends on where I go, though, because not a lot of people are going to have this. This is a very Southern thing, too. Boiled peanuts.
Ooh.
Do go on.
Boiled peanuts is, you know, you got these peanuts in a can, or these peanuts have been soaked in some sort of, I don't know,
mix.
And they're salty. And sometimes they could be spicy too, depending on if you want a Cajun version of it or not. And so you do them, you serve them while they're hot. And so instead of like peanuts that you roast, they're just peanuts that you boil and you may put, you know, salt. Some people like to put vinegar. Some people like to do something in it and let it sit there, and you eat them when they're hot, and it's so good. Sometimes you put a little cayenne pepper, you know, you can put some paprika. Now, I don't know. Some people are different about what they do and put on their boiled peanuts. But I said, this is a very Southern thing. This is what I'm like.
Yeah.
This is where the Southern girl comes in, because I'm like, if you know you're from some really like back Alleywood's town. They would know exactly what I'm talking about because they would serve them at the like the convenience store where you could just go, you know, like some, now some bodegas have them, like, you know, you can find them. Yum. Like, but it's, yeah, boiled peanuts used to be my jam.
That sounds so delicious.
Anything
hot, title of that.
Hot and salty.
Hot and salty.
All I need.
That's my go-to.
I don't know what my third one would be. I would definitely need a 64-ounce Diet Peach Snapple. No question.
Absolutely. I don't know why I didn't say that. I have to have one.
I'm thinking some corn nuts for salty and crunchy.
Okay. I like that.
And then I want something sweet to balance it. So some sort of, I'm between like the sour gummy or the Werther's Original Soft Chew.
Oh.
For the...
Yeah. That's decadent. I would. I'm always a Werther's Original.
Yeah. So good.
I don't know. I feel like I want a little sour. I want a little kick.
Yeah.
A little tart. Yeah. Yeah. So I can annoy somebody in the
car. You could feel it right in the back of your right. tongue.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
Oh.
As I.
Oh, I can feel it now. Damn it!
I can feel it. Yeah. After going to the dentist to get my teeth clean, and my dentist is like, great choice. Sorry. Yeah, great one.
Ari, we have to talk about your recent appearance in the press.
Oh my God.
You've been all over these pages.
It's crazy.
And these screens.
It's crazy.
Because during our mega mix, your wig flew off.
Absolutely.
How and far you... did it fly?
Off.
It just fell off the floor to off. The point where I said, I need to pick it up and get it out my way. Because at this point, I was over the show at that point. It was
a bit of a gremlin show for a lot of people. That show was off balance.
Very off balance.
Interesting. And I said this to you that night. And I said this to you that night, and Julia Murney taught us this on this podcast. When you are a leading lady, there is kind of this unspoken responsibility that you have to lead the company.
Yes.
You're not just doing your part. You're not just in your track. Like, everyone in the building is now taking their cues from you.
Yep.
So if you start to get a little flappy, everyone else is going to start to feel a little flappy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the burden that you bear, and sorry about it. And also, congratulations, they trust you to do it. And you did it. All of that to say, that show happened because you remained cool as a cucumber. You let it roll off your back like a duck, mm-hmm. and you went on that stage and you quacked.
I surely did.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And then the wig falling off was just the cherry on top.
It was. I was like, oh my gosh, you gotta be kidding
me. The theater ghost said, just one more.
Just one more. There's some ghosts at the LaFontaine. They are really comedians because they really like to pick and choose who they're going to mess with.
Yeah.
they're
friendly ghosts.
They're friendly ghosts.
They're Caspers.
They're Caspers, but they do like to shake things up every now and then.
It's still their house.
Yeah, it's still their house.
Mm-hmm. I had a front row seat to all of this. So I'm stage right. We like to, we all know the Megamix choreo backstage. So we all like to, you know, do it from time to time and give the girls on stage a little extra energy. Because
yes,
that extra 10 minutes after you've bowed is hard.
It's hard after doing a show and it's almost like 3 hours. Yeah.
And what songs are in the Megamix? Like, put us in the room if we have not seen it.
So if you haven't seen it, I don't know if I can give it away.
You can't. Maybe you can. Let's say it's Tina Turner's biggest hits.
We'll keep one
surprise and the other one, because there's video of your wig flying off.
Yeah.
Proud Mary.
It's Proud Mary.
To be expected.
Okay, right? Yes. We'll add that to our Instagram.
The other ones for the Tina people, I don't want to ruin, because they really love that song. So okay. I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't want to ruin it. But the funny thing is that in Tina, I normally play Tina's sister. So I play the opposite of Tina in almost everything that she does. And so that night I was playing Tina, where I have to switch, where I'm like, no, girl, now you're on the opposite side of what you do. And it was one of those things where, like, the sound was not working. So nobody, our musicians couldn't hear each other out of their ear.
Right. Sheldon had to play drums.
Sheldon had to play the drums. Our thing is, what that's cool about Tina is that we actually have some musicians that are like actually in the show. They are in the scenes. Mm-hmm. They run up from their position from backstage where they normally set up to play with the band. And then sometimes they have a drum set, an electronic drum kit on stage. And then our bass player,
full costume, full wig.
Guitar player would have a full wig, full costume, all of this stuff. And that day, none of the musicians could hear anything out of their ear. Our drummer was sitting next to our conductor trying to speak and give him the metronome for each song. So the monitors weren't working. We couldn't hear each other. They couldn't hear me. I couldn't hear them. The musicians couldn't hear each other. That was our show. Our show started 20 minutes late for that already. And so the entire first act, I said, great, I can't hear nothing. So I'm looking at these monitors with our MD, Alvin Hodge, who did a wonderful job, trying to figure out, am I on the right beat, sir? Because I can't hear nothing. Everything is mono on stage. Our wonderful swing, Sheldon Henry, had to come in, get dressed to be the drummer, because it looks weird. The first scene, the Club Manhattan, we didn't have a drummer or a bass player.
Big drum kit center stage and nobody playing drums.
And nobody's playing drums. All I know is Nick Rashad Burroughs, who plays Ike, turns around to cue the band to stop, and there was no band there to be found.
And what?
I said, what is going on? So Shelly, we call him Keisha, because that's just the name we've given. It's a long story. So Shelly, aka Keisha, has to come in,
got his clothes
to be Rocky the drummer. Mm-hmm. And also the drum kit we thought was turned off actually wasn't turned off, so he starts playing and it starts playing things and he's like, oh, so I gotta really mime this, because this thing is doing its own thing. And so that entire show, Shelly had to go and be Rocky the drummer on stage, trying to play these drums. And Shelly said, I don't play the drums, but we're gonna make it work.
Broadway.
So that was the entire show. There was something wrong with my costumes, my magnets for one of them. I think the way they were either washed or the way it was sewn in for one dress was just like not working. And there's this, if you see Tina, you know, y'all have seen it, for those who are listening who have not, Tina does not leave the stage. She only leaves the stage for a 30 second change. And if you don't make that 30 second change, well, you are just, you know, out of luck, because you don't have no time. You're trying to drink water. You're trying to get your new wig on. You're trying to put on your shoes. You're trying to put on this fabulous dress. All with under 20 to 30 seconds so that she can make it on stage.
With about two dressers and a hair person at least.
And you're on stage the entire time. The fact that they even dress you on stage, the ensemble dresses you on stage. you're trying to get some drink of water. You speak throughout the entire show. You're singing throughout like 27 songs throughout the entire show. And some of my costumes weren't working. Like there was one time I missed one cue and came out late because that beautiful dress in Disco Inferno, Steven, you remember, got so tangled and the zipper just wasn't working the way that it was supposed to, that I'm just sitting here like, oh, well, we'll see if somebody will step up and be the lead. Please, somebody take over.
Better be good to me.
Better be good
to me. Better be good to me.
And the ghost at the La Fontaine said, absolutely not. So it was, that was just like, that was the whole gist of the show. And we were already coming off with that energy. And I was like, instead of being mad about it, I was just like, all right, well, cool. Next one, we'll get it next time. Because you just don't have time. You don't have time to be flustered. Because if you're flustered, it's going to ruin your whole show. It's like you don't have time. So you get through it. And, you know, you're like, okay, I made it through the show. All right, let's do this thing. Let's close this baby out. We're already 20 minutes behind. And, you know, we don't want the people to get overtime.
It's 11:15.
It's 11:15. So the people are already getting overtime, right? And do this, sing the first song in the mega mix, get to Proud Mary. Everybody's like, yeah, do it again. And we're like, oh, yay for y'all. Because we love you. One more time. And we get in it, and we get into the, you know, her signature moves. And all I know is the wig falls down. And I was so mad to the point that I said, you know what? I get the wig. I scoop it up, throw it stage right, and then get right back on beat. Because I said, I got to go home. I have to go home. We're going to go home.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes, we're going to go home. And so everybody's screaming while they're seeing my wig cap and the magnet that is on my head. And doing the choreography. But then at some point, there's a guitar solo within Proud Mary that gives me enough time to go off stage and then put my wig back on. And I was like, see y'all, theater magic. Voila. Bet your Harry Potter isn't doing this, honeys.
That guitar solo is what, 8 bars? Maybe 16?
Maybe 16? Like, maybe. It could be about a good 8 because it's so quick.
She walks on stage, right? And Crystal, our hair supervisor, is like pulling pins out of her wrist, like a bat out of hell, and just pinning this thing back. And Ari's like, I'm good. I'm good. And everyone's just like, how can I help? And everyone knew just to not get too close, let them do it. And she walked right back out on that stage. And she was like,
there you go.
That's it. I mean, what's your next question?
Wingardium Leviosa, y'all. This is Harry Potter who...
Any acting teacher will tell you your greatest acting moments, your most inspired moments will come when you are over it. When you are tired, then do your scene.
Oh my gosh.
You will be amazing.
And she's not wrong, because the way I picked up that wig and I said, you know what? I've had it up to here. Ghost of the La Fontaine.
Glenn was practically on his knees, just like trying to grab it off the stage. Without getting kicked by Katie Webber. Without getting
kicked by Katie Webber. Katie Webber was like, wait, your wig fell off.
So I have a question regarding the wig. Do you have a protocol of what happens if it does happen?
Well, I bet you they probably will now.
They will now.
There was no protocol. I think it, and to be honest, I don't know if that could have happened to anybody else that night. I don't know what anybody else would have done. I would assume that most of them would have gone on, because I think everybody is professional and wonderful at Tina, that they just have that, you know, instinct to do it. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how they would have felt afterwards. So I was like, there might have been a reason why it sort of happened to me. Because most people are like, Ari, you know, she gets a lot of the, you know, if anything happens, she's normally good with going on, unless if it was like something that somebody was in danger. Normally I will continue to go on and just be cautious about it, but I don't know what people would have done, honestly, if that would have happened to them. I don't know if they would have wanted to continue.
Response.
It was, and I just was like, girl, we fighting because we got to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You
we got to go.
Did the math real quick that, okay, it's Mega Mix. Nobody's in danger. There's no more sets moving. There's no entrances. There's nothing. We've bowed. This is extra.
This is extra.
So I'm going to make it extra.
And we sure did.
What press picked it up? I mean, you were everywhere.
People Magazine.
Wendy Williams.
It was like, it started with People Magazine, and then it just went on from here, and then it was on Good Morning America, then it was on Wendy Williams, then it was on The Talk, and then somebody said it was on Access Daily with Mario Lopez being like, oh, that was so great. And I was just like, I'm sorry, what is going on? Then it was on Huffington Post, then BET. You know you, BET is a black person. You're like, oh, I done made it. like BuzzFeed, a whole bunch of other stuff where I was just like, how did this get this far?
Is that a blessing in disguise?
I guess you could call it that, you know, or as my little cousin, she liked to say blessing in disguise because she thinks it's in the sky. And I was just like, oh, that's so cute, girl. It's a blessing in disguise. That's what she says.
She's not wrong.
So I assume so, I guess.
I love what Sherry Shepherd said, you know, as a Broadway vet herself.
Okay.
From Cinderella. She was like, anybody who's worn a wig, you know when it's about to fall off. Because it slides first. It never just flies.
It slides first.
So you have a warning. There's nothing you can do. Because you have a mic in it. You have other things tied up in it. You can't just yank it.
Right. And you're putting your head, you know, you're doing a move where your head is flying down first.
Yeah.
And I felt that slide and I said, well.
Sliding on the river.
Well, sliding on the river. This is my demise as Tina. And I don't know what is about to happen after this. By that third one, I said, oh yeah, she's off.
Well, honestly, at the end of the day, it's what would Tina do? And you did what Tina would do. And that's
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you. A lot of people.
You are playing Tina.
Some people would beg to differ. They would be like, Tina would never be caught with that. I said, first of all, how many people here have seen Tina in their lifetime perform? So a lot of them were younger people because I was just like, y'all have never seen Tina in her lifetime perform. You don't know what she's done. But also, they're like, you know, drag queens keep their wigs on. I said, no, I've seen plenty of shows where drag queens have danced their wigs off and they get all of the dollars in the world.
Yeah.
That's right.
They pass that wig around like an offering basket.
Okay. So I was just like, you know, a lot of people like, oh, it wouldn't be me because my team would know better. I'm like, no, we had a great team. It's just sometimes things do happen. Like when you think your wig, you know, is secured to the best of its abilities, I might dance and a, you know, clip may fly off, a pin may fly off, and there's, you know,
Titanic thought it had a whole bunch of dinghies. It didn't.
And it did. And it did happen. You know.
Do you have other memorable onstage oopsie doopsie whoopsies that
do they measure up to this one?
I don't know if they measure up to this one, but there was one time it was a trickle effect. And I think it was one time when I was playing one of the iCats and we were doing Higher. And something had happened, and all I know is one person that did the choreography wrong, so I thought I was doing the choreography wrong. So then the other girls thought they were doing the choreography wrong, and we were all doing different things. And we were like, what is happening? So it ended up being four solos, and then when we got to the chorus, we were all back to where it was. But we were like, did I do this? She said, no, it was because of me, because I did this, then she did this, and then y'all thought y'all were all wrong, so we were just wrong.
I could picture y'all's faces though.
Oh my god.
Selling it.
We were selling it
with your teeth.
Trying to sell it. And we were like, y'all know we wrong, right? It's okay.
It's fine.
It's always like stuff with the iCats. That is hilarious to me. Oh no, there is one time playing Aileen, which is Tina's sister, where I was trying to grab the phone. There's a scene where I'm having a phone call with Tina, and I got an old school, you know, like phone that you hold with the landline, and you got to turn the things instead of
the rotary phone.
Yeah, the rotary phone. I had a rotary phone and trying to hold it in the bag where you can hold it. And I think Matthew had gave it to me and it kind of slipped and I caught it. But then Tina was saying something and I had the phone here and I said, I'm sorry, girl. I just dropped the phone. What you say now? And everybody died because, again.
Unflappable.
Again, the ghost at the LaFontaine love to pick at me because they want to see what I will do. And when that phone dropped, and Tina had said something, and I said, girl, I'm sorry, I almost dropped this phone because of your son. What did you say now? And I said, you know what, Ari, you might be all right in this life.
Trust the character.
Trust the character. Because if it's somebody that can improv, it's going to be me. And you can Ari, thank Little Shop of Horrors for that.
I have not heard that story. That is hilarious. I
think that might have been right before you got there, Stephen. Or it might have been like you were working there, but you weren't doing as many days as you're doing
I
now.
Wasn't paying attention to anybody, that's for sure.
Glenn was like, when you dropped that phone and you picked it up and then you said what you said, I almost lost it. I said, I almost did too. That phone could have hit somebody in the head.
You almost started a whole comedy set. Like, who's here? How are we doing, Cincinnati?
Yes. Eileen is the one to do it. She's the comedian.
Who's here on a date? Who's here on a date?
Oh, my goodness. That was the one time I said, you know what, Ari, maybe you just need to quit, girl, because you just, the ghost at the LaFontaine just love to pick at you. You got to find something else.
That's brilliant. Transitioning in the interest of time, I need to know more about your DJ life because, again, I only know you at work life.
Yeah.
That's right. We love a multi-hyphenate.
An Hourglass Tavern life. We love a multi-hyphenate.
Yes. DJing has always kind of been something that's kind of been around my life the whole time. Well, especially, I would say, the music aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Being in Atlanta and I used to dance for this sort of underground group. They used to call themselves the Funk Lords. And they were, you know, a bunch of B-boys and B-girls, poppers and lockers, in the old school sense of how New York used to be when it comes to Cypher. And we would always have, you know, our MC, our dancers, you know, B-boy, B-girl, you know, person who does the graffiti, and then your DJ. And so our DJ was like, you know, just integral to the whole function. And I would always be around the DJ. We would always change vinyls or, you know, exchange vinyls for, you know, something. And let me listen to this. So it's always been there, but it wasn't until I got to New York City where I was just like, you know what, I'm actually in the Mecca. So let me try to, you know, do this thing. And I really got into it once Holla If You Hear Me closed. Mm. And I was just like, you know, maybe I should really start to get into DJing. So I ended up buying like a turntable, this equipment, this mixer, and an MK2 Technique for all the DJs, Technics, who all DJs out there listening, y'all know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like the diamond, you know, turntable you're supposed to have. They don't make them anymore. So, wow. But I got started with this because I was just like, I have a love for music. And then I had a mentor that I met with. His name is OP Miller. He goes by OP, he's a wonderful DJ, and he used to have a collective called I Love Vinyl, and it was an I Love Vinyl crew where they would go out every Friday or Saturday night, I can't remember, in Brooklyn, and play at this club, and they would play all like 70s funk and 80s funk and a whole bunch of stuff, but it was all vinyl. They would, you know, have 33s or 45s, most of them 45s, because it was easier to carry. For the people who don't know, you had to put vinyl in the crates and put it in the car. You didn't have iTunes back then. It was heavy. Crates. You had to lift crates.
The slats.
Exactly. So they would, you know, they loved the nostalgia of it. So they kept that going. And that's kind of like how I met my mentor, OP. And he would also teach certain aspects of DJing. And I was like, let me learn from you. And I learned a lot from him. About the music and how to create the atmosphere, but also the technical side of it that comes with DJing, because a lot of people forget, you know, DJing. You also have to be sort of a sound person, an audio engineer to your own thing, or at least be able to speak the language that your audio engineer at a club would do. And because I was a woman, and a lot of men will talk to you as if you don't know what you are talking about. It's like the same thing for women who are plumbers or women who are engineers or are taking something of physical, you know, assets or whatever. And he taught me a lot of things. He was like, I want you to be able to learn how to play on all types of things. You have turntables, you have CDJs, you have controllers now, which are an all-in-one unit that you can take with you. And he was just like, I don't want you to, you can have a preference of what you like to play, but if they don't have it, I don't want that to hinder you from learning how to play the music, because the music is always going to come. You're going to find a way. And he was really good at that. And all I know is I ended up really getting into it. And I think it's because of also being a dancer. I was really into, you know, creating an atmosphere. So I would create playlists in my room, send it to people, or I would go to certain places and we would do a snob. Like, for those who are in theater, if you know what a snob is, they would normally do it on Sunday nights. Or, I'm sorry, not Sunday, Saturday nights. And it would be after a two-show day. Since we can't necessarily go to the club the next day because we have a show on Sunday, and sometimes it would be two shows or either one show on Sunday, but you would pay your person, the theater person at the door, some change, you know, get them a bottle, it's a great alcohol, good selection, and you can stay in your theater, in your dressing rooms, and party and play music until maybe like 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning. And it's something that I started getting into. And to be honest, the big person who really started it is my brother and my actual like business partner in my Ashley DJ collective. His name is Preston Duggar, and he goes by DJ Duggs. He started doing this at Memphis a long time ago, like in 2009. And it became something that we all kind of have done. And so because of that, having theater as a background and then having DJing as a background, I wanted to be part of this collective and started this collective with my business partner, DJ Duggs, who was the same thing. He was a not only a company ballet dancer, but he was also a Broadway person and a DJ. So we got together with our other business partner, and she's a lovely, lovely woman. Her name is Emily McGill, and she was really good at doing a lot of PR, also a lot of AR for a lot of companies. She would work for Kenny Leon. She has done a lot of different things with consulting, and she's also a theater person who loves music. We all decided to make this collective called Snob, and for us, it's Sunday nights on Broadway, because Sunday is our Friday since we're off on Mondays. And we started doing these parties, these monthly parties for the Broadway community or people who are artists who have always wanted to go to something that's underground and have a chance to be free, drink, have a good time without feeling like they have to be performative all the time. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as performers, we're always feeling like we have to, you know, get up and perform to get through the day. And this was something that we decided to do in, like, I want to say 2018 was our first year that we did it. And, you know, despite the pandemic, we've still been holding on to it and have been branching out and getting bigger. So because of that, we've been DJing for opening parties. The last biggest thing we did was the opening night of, not the opening night, but the reopening of Broadway with Passover. We did a block party. That was rad. Huge.
Of course.
That's so cool.
And so because of that, we've sort of been getting our name out there of what we can do and what we can offer, and hopefully, you know, branch out even more with that within Broadway. Because I think every industry sort of has that underground parties that people go to. We already know musicians have it. Prince used to do it all the time. Mm-hmm. Movies, they sort of have it. Broadway and theater don't really have that world, and it's definitely a world there for the people. So we wanted to try to create it and dabble in that. And that's basically how Snob became what it became and how DJing has been going for me. So a lot of opening nights.
Yeah.
I love the mashing up of like a completely, I mean, it's still music, but it's a different culture being mashed into something.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
I love it.
And that was something that we wanted to express, because I think the thing, sometimes the problem that Broadway has when it comes to doing shows is that I don't think representation of culture or allowing cultures to be, you know, to be able to be authentic in a sense, authentically themselves in a sense, where I feel like Snob allows people who may not normally go through things like this can go come to things like this and feel safe about immersing themselves in the culture, and also respecting the culture for what it is. So we're always trying to show people that culture is cool. You can immerse yourself in it. You can also respect it. You can also watch from a distance and admire it. But I think it's teaching Broadway the importance of it, because sometimes, you know, you'll take the culture and you'll try to recreate it on stage without thanking the people or bringing the people to actually, you know, make it authentic. So that's something we want to do and what we've been doing. Yeah.
Huge. That's it. Huge.
It's not.
Such a pioneer.
Yeah. We're trying to be international sooner or later.
Hello.
Get out to the West End out there. That's what we're trying to do.
It would be, what would that be? Snow with an E at the end.
Snow. Yes.
Sunday night on the West End.
On the West End.
Ooh, how British with an E at the end.
We might need to pay you for that idea now.
We have one last question that we like to ask all of our guests. There are 7 very well-known dwarves in history. If you were the 8th dwarf, what would your name be?
Groovy?
Yes!
Groovy Dwarf.
That's my first Groovy.
Groovy Dwarf. Groovy. It's perfect.
I mean, it's my last name. My last name. And a lot of people are like, is your last name actually Groover? And I'm like, yeah, y'all. I really can't make it up.
That's God.
I had to double check. I was like, is that real?
Yeah, because a lot of people are like, that's a great stage name. And I'm like, nah, I really wish I could say it was, but it wasn't. Can't take credit for that one.
Groover Grooves Groovy. Gravy.
Yeah. Groovy.
Thank you for joining us. It was so lovely to meet you.
Of course. It was lovely to be around y'all, beautiful souls.
Thanks for spending part of your day off with me.
Oh, of course.
Where can people find you, follow you, and keep up with you on the internet?
Okay. And I really suck at this, y'all. I really have to be better about this. But you can either follow me on Instagram, which is my DJ name, which is Ari, A-R-I, _, and then Grooves, Groovess. Same thing with Twitter as well. I'm on those most. I mean, Facebook is cool, but I use that for friends and family. Y'all really don't want me on Facebook because I don't really say too much. I don't. I'm working on rebranding my website, which is arigrooves.com. But I have a link tree on my Instagram. So if you ever want to find something, you can go there.
Love a link tree.
Yeah, a little one-stop shop. Same thing. Ari Grooves, link tree. You can find that.
Oh, you're so cool.
Oh, thank you.
Steven, well done.
Thanks, Queen. I'll see you tomorrow. But
I'll see you tomorrow.
In the Room with Stephen and Dana is produced by Stephen Farazzi
and Dana Craig. Special thanks to Joel Wagoner for tinkling the ivories on our theme song. Hit him up at joelwagoner.com.
We apologize, and you're welcome. We'd also like to thank Jesse Wiener, Wiener. For our jazzy original music sprinkled throughout each episode.
You can find him at jessewiener.com.
Last but certainly not least, we'd like to thank Kevin Thomas Garcia for taking all of our ridiculous photos. You can find him online at ktgnyc.com. We are all over the internet on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at InTheRoomPod.
Follow us, like us, share us, pimp us out. And don't forget to subscribe to In the Room Podcast. We everywhere, so subscribe. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.